The chairman's script was written by Colin Swash and Dan Gaster, and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.
The food programme is next. First, a few words about the world this weekend from Edward Sturton.
Hello, there's nothing like an upset to liven up an election. What went wrong for Mitt Romney in the primary that was supposed to sew up the battle to be the Republican nominee in this year's American presidential campaign? And where does it leave the race? The Scottish Secretary, Michael Moore, on his reasons to be cheerful about the signals from the Edinburgh government on an independence referendum. And as the Arab League meets to consider the future of its Syrian monitoring mission, we'll hear live from our Middle East editor in Damascus. The world this weekend in half an hour.
Thanks, Edward. This week, the Prime Minister set out his vision to build a better economy. Can ideas developing around food help show the way? It's a question Sheila Dillon's asking in the food programme.
So I was thinking, who else besides government is powerful enough to help save the world? Business! Huge corporations! The problem is that corporations will do anything for money. But what if the solution were that corporations will do anything for money?
This is a program about people organizing events called boycotts, and about people creating new ways of buying and selling food.
We're Sustination. We're like a dating site for local food business, making it easy and convenient for you to find, buy, and sell local produce. Just type in your location and you'll find nearby people who are keen to do business,
with some growing in between.
What we want is to make this accessible to everybody, irrespective of age, income, culture. It doesn't matter. Food is for everybody. Sharing is for everybody. Opportunity is for everybody. On our estates, people are learning new skills. They're growing for themselves. They're starting to relate to each other. It's the beginning of a revolution.
The voices of people who are changing the way all of us are going to be thinking about food and future. Some of the work has been made real by millions of pounds of investment from charities and foundations, from lottery funds and communities clubbing together. Then it was fertilised by the social networking tools that power the likes of Facebook and Twitter, enabling Britain's young thinkers and activists to learn from and share skills with contemporaries all over the globe. So, a global food movement in Britain with an appetite for action. Action focused on more human and better quality ways of growing, selling, and buying our food. Many of the people developing these ideas came together the other week at an event called the Oxford Real Farming Conference. It was a rare opportunity for people in towns and cities all over the UK to meet, describe their work, and share ideas.
So we've got a continual cycle of what we call the lost arts training going on, and I think they're making pickles there.
The conference was organised by Colin Tudge, the man behind the campaign for real farming and the author of Feeding People is Easy, a man on a mission.
Precisely what we're trying to do here is to show that ordinary people, as it were, who have not necessarily ever thought about farming, could get into it if only they just took the necessary steps. And part of the agenda, obviously, is to identify what those steps are. And another point is to show why it's necessary. But what we've got here is a whole number of people, some of whom are established farmers, many of whom are not, who are showing that you can't actually get into it, even if you don't have any money, even if you live in a city. And the secret of it really is to gang together, collaboration is all, and not take no for an answer, and not be put off by the technicalities, because actually you learn as you go along.
It's an interesting time to look at Colin Tudge's ambitions for our food system. He wants to create 1 million more farmers in a time of high youth unemployment, economic and political uncertainty, and record-breaking land prices. Big issues in the world of grassroots activism. Dan Saladino was there to report on them at what sometimes seemed like a special kind of dragon's den of new food ideas.
The whole world's watching! The whole world's watching! The whole world's watching! The whole world's watching!
Before we get to that food and farming story, first, some context.
Tens of thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of cities around the world to voice their anger at the handling of the financial crisis.
The protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration about how our financial system works.
On our television screens in recent months, whether because of the economic crisis, record youth unemployment, or the rise of social networks, we've witnessed a shift taking place in how people think, engage, and organise themselves around the big issues of the day. Think of the likes of the UK's Uncut movement, or in the US, Occupy Wall Street.
It's enough that people have just gotten up off the sofa and gotten involved. It's enough that people have pushed through their despair.
It takes this out of a Woodstock Nation type of thing, and it puts it to a working class type thing. Like, we have colorful types here. Sometimes it takes colorful types to start this. But this is not like a pop culture riot. This is real.
The whole world's watching! The whole world's watching! The whole
In the United States, there's this really ugly word. I'm not sure if it's crossed the Atlantic, but this idea of millennials.
Raj Patel is the author of Stuffed and Starved, a book on the global food system. And he lectures on new social movements at the University of California, Berkeley.
Young people who are in their teens and 20s now, who are fed up with politics as usual. There's very little of interest in it for them. What they'd much rather be doing is something concrete and practical, which is one of the reasons why you see this sort of efflorescence of sort of practical solutions to problems in the food system. And I think that that's been one of the interesting sort of realizations that's happening through Occupy, is that, yes, you've got all these young people doing things on farms, but they're also now making connections between what they do and the bigger economic system in which they do it and against which they are doing it.
In the US, Raj Patel has been able to observe movements like Occupy extend its range of interests from Wall Street to food matters, setting up urban growing schemes, organizing food distribution hubs for people who've lost jobs and homes. On one level, the generation behind Occupy is simply demanding fresh thinking about how we do politics and how we organize economies. In the last few days, we've had Nick Clegg and David Cameron making their own contribution to the debate with calls for a John Lewis economy, supporting more employee ownership, and now plans being discussed to make it easier to set up cooperatives. So from Occupy to the Coalition, the hunt is on for new models and fresh ideas. And if you look at some of those taking shape around food, you'll find people who are very focused on what they want to change and how they're going to make that change happen. So here we have a small selection of examples. Our first isn't about growing food. It comes from the consumer end of the supply chain. But it says a lot about a growing attitude, about technology, and the desire to make things happen.
As citizens and as consumers, we may not be able to wield a whole lot of individual power. But when we do things together, our power is ridiculous.
This is the online explanation of how a social media network called Carrot Mob works, a website that brings like-minded consumers together to use their combined spending power and bring about change.
It's consumer power, and you have to respect it. Since we're going to be making you offers you can't refuse.
That's Carrot Mob's founder, Brent Shulkin, who I spoke to through his medium of choice, Skype.
How do you go about changing a business or influencing a business? Well, you think of things like boycotts and protests and signing petitions and this sort of thing. And that's not really getting to the core of how businesses make decisions. And so Carrot Mob is about what really matters to a business is money and spending and new customers and marketing and that sort of thing.
I went to 23 liquor stores in my neighborhood. At each store, I said, look, I'm going to build a network of consumers and we're going to come spend a lot of money at one of these stores. Our goal is to make one of you an environmentally friendly store. Which store is it going to be? Well, whoever makes the strongest environmental commitment. I asked them, what percentage of the money that we spend are you willing to set aside for energy efficiency improvements to your store?
The answer in that case was 22%, and so Carrot Mob created a boycott of 400 people who gathered at the store and spent a total of $9,000 in just over an hour. A simple idea that has led to Carrot Mob boycotts throughout the US, in Argentina, Mexico, Finland, Thailand, and Austria. And many of them aimed at changing how food businesses work.
Restaurants can choose to have local produce and organic produce, and you can have retail stores can choose to carry fair trade products or not. And so that's a very interesting type of campaign that we've been seeing more and more of.
Carrot Mob is now developing technology that will allow it to trigger boycotts of food brands belonging to some of the world's biggest companies. So it's one to watch. But it's also the activist mindset of its organisers that we might see spreading.
The older generation would watch videos at the video store. We're a generation that's creating videos on YouTube. Things like technology and the internet and social media, we are just becoming more and more accustomed to our ability to create. And all across the world, things like the Arab Spring and things like the Occupy movement, you know, there's so many examples of people saying, we want to be heard. People can vote and they can be heard that way, but it's not enough. And I think that by voting with your money, that is a whole new realm of how you can be heard, and using that spending in networks that you create yourself, form up with other groups, spend money together, and that will give you a whole new way to influence your society. I think that's absolutely something that our generation wants to do.
And it's exactly that idea of people spending money within networks they've created for themselves that's behind our next idea, one that was described at the Oxford Real Farming Conference as a dating agency for people interested in local food. And it went live just a few days ago.
We're Sustination. Almost all the food we eat is supplied via a business. So if we want to make a big difference quickly, these are the connections we need to change. This is where Sustination comes in. We join the dots to make it easier for businesses and organizations to buy and sell good local produce. Just type in your location and you'll find nearby people who are keen to do business.
The man behind Sustination is Ed Dowding, a computer programmer who started his career designing London's powerful emergency response systems, as well as those of major corporations. He's now turning his attention and his expertise towards food.
If you know LinkedIn, it's a bit like that, but with maps, or say Facebook for food. So by connecting up as many food enterprises as possible, and by mapping the information of who's got what, where, and when, you can make all this invisible information visible, and then start to act on it and start to communicate with people so that you can relocalize the supply chain. Say a restaurant wants to demonstrate where it sources from, so they can have a profile there and they can say, yeah, we trade with all these people within 15 miles, these people within 30 miles, and have that as a map. So you can then see who else is supplied by the same suppliers of this restaurant. And so you start providing visibility to the consumer, but the people who get the most benefit from it are businesses who are interested in trading more locally. So you end up with a sort of self-reinforcing supply chain, a self-optimizing supply chain, by just giving people the visibility of the connections.
Now, from trading food to growing it. If Facebook has been a surprising source of inspiration behind attempts to create local food networks, another source of inspiration from the US is slowly changing how we produce food. And it's a story that's been captured brilliantly in film.
To pay my debts, I had to sell almost all of my land. Land my grandpa had bought during the Depression. Now I had to part with these fields that I romped as a child and tended as a farmer.
The real dirt on Farmer John is the true story of the fall and rise of John Peterson, who, during the 1980s, when many family farms fell into debt in the US, went through bankruptcy and breakdown, nearly losing all of his land, but saves himself and his farm through what strikes him at first as a very odd idea. CSA, or Community Supported Agriculture.
I finally thought, this is what farming should be. It's having a direct relationship with the people you grow the food for. So I started a CSA farm, Community Supported Agriculture, a revolutionary approach to farming.
Want a bite?
People join my farm for a whole season and share in the harvest. They put money up in advance, trusting me to run this farm.
An inspirational story and film, but one that also reflects the success of a movement that, according to the United States Department of Agriculture, now includes 13,000 farms and is still growing. Here, CSA had a slow start in the mid-1990s, but it's now being seen as an approach that can allow people to begin a career in farming. CSA farmer Ed Hamer is an example of the kind of person Colin Tudge wants to see more of. A new, young farmer making real connections with the people he ends up feeding. And so Ed had turned up at the Oxford Real Farming Conference to show others what is now possible.
leeks work really well, and brassicas, the brassicas tend to really respond well to the ridge system.
From my personal experience, I grew up working on farms around the area where I live on the edge of Dartmoor, and I was mainly working for farmers who had bought their farms, not necessarily inherited them, but bought them in the 60s and 70s on a mortgage, and then actually paid that mortgage back through a combination of hard work and sensible business management. I think that was quite a common model back 20, 30 years ago, whereas now actually land price inflation has got to such a point that that model is not achievable by my generation. So we've got to use our initiative to find a different way of getting ourselves onto the land. And I think starting small, we're only on 3 acres, starting on a small acreage like this with a community supported model is actually a perfect way for young entrants to get into farming and learn the skills as they go along. At the moment we're supplying 50 veg shares a week to our local community, and we aim to be by April this year we'll be supplying 75 veg shares a week, at which point we'll be covering our running costs and supporting two full-time growers on the land there.
The reason why the CSA model is starting to take hold in the UK is in part down to recent financial support and the spread of expertise. For example, 4 years ago, a project called Making Local Food Work was set up with £10 million from the big lottery fund. It was built around the existing expertise of one of its founding organisations, the Plunkett Foundation. So people like Ed Hamer were able to apply for funds to secure tenancy agreements and get help setting out a business plan. Jennifer Smith has overseen the programme.
Our goal was to work with about 650 enterprises in the lifetime of the programme. We've actually worked with over 1,300. And what that has meant is that that's actually impacted on well over 6,000 local producers as well. In terms of some of the traits of these organisations, they have very, very motivated people. They oftentimes have one kind of very strong voice in the centre who kind of keeps it moving.
But the latest variation on this model involves a group of five young people, all with no farming experience, all have worked together on a serious business plan, and will start their market garden in a few weeks' time.
I'm Julian Cotty, one of the five co-founders of a new social enterprise called Cultivate.
I'm Dan Beston. And we're here today looking across our blank canvas. This is a 5 acre field we've taken on in South Oxfordshire. At the moment, there's a green manure crop going, and about the only thing growing is the hedgerow. There's a few sloes, but even they're looking a bit past it. But come June, this will be a beautiful market garden.
We're going to have two poly tunnels up at that end of the field, doing some of the more delicate stuff and allowing us to start the growing season a bit earlier. But the general principle is to grow a wide range of fruit and veg for the local market.
We put a business plan together around a swelling demand for local food in Oxford, and where we are at the moment is we've just launched our community share offer. So we're a community benefit society, a type of cooperative, and we can offer members of the public an opportunity to invest if they like the idea, the business plan we present. And not only do they help make that happen, but they also become active, engaged members. One member, one vote. They'll decide the future of Cultivate, as well as giving it the initial capital injection it needs to get going. Our main route to market will be via a mobile veg van that will go exactly where communities want it and need it.
We want to look for new avenues for getting local food into the city and into the surrounding towns. So our idea is to go out to places where people are, so we can go to the train station when people are coming back from their commute to London, or we can go to local schools when parents are picking up their kids. This is a small project. We've got 5 acres of land here. On some estimates, we'd need about 100,000 acres of land to feed a city the size of Oxford. We're a drop in the ocean. But what we're aiming to do is to use this business as a platform for creating a wider energy around social change. So we want to be talking about everything that we're doing, getting the message out there. I think we know we're going to be taking a hit in terms of what we could be earning by doing this. But the reward from doing it is so much greater than anything we could ever get in a more highly paid job.
I think the priority for a lot of us is, try and earn enough to survive so that we don't have to do anything else, because this is what we want to do.
So, two more of Colin Tudge's new generation of farmers there, south of the city of Oxford. But our final example of community food action is already working on a very different scale.
These are the incredible edible allotments. This is where they grow most of their produce.
Here in the incredible edible polytunnel in Walsden, they grow a variety of different tomato plants. These are Italian cooking tomatoes. They're not quite ripe yet, but as soon as they are, they'll be used in restaurants across Tobberden.
What we want is to make this accessible to everybody. Food is for everybody. Sharing is for everybody. Opportunity is for everybody.
Pam Warhurst, one of the founders of Incredible Edible Todmorden, an idea that turned a small town into one big food and social experiment, making it one of the most celebrated examples of community action so far. 4 years ago, a small group of people decided to start growing food in public places. Food could be planted, picked, shared, and eaten by passers-by. It's now operating on a scale that's drawn in most of the town, its businesses, and public services. One of the founders, Mary Clear, was telling that story at the Oxford Real Farming Conference.
We're right on the border between Lancashire and Yorkshire in the Pennines. It was really something that we wanted to do in a response to a lack of leadership nationally and locally about food security. So we thought there must be something that ordinary people in an ordinary town could do. So we came up with the idea of a membership organisation, but as we wouldn't have any money, offices or filing cabinets, our membership would be if you eat, you're in. This is about action. We are not a sitting down, talking, vacillating organisation, we're action. So our very first things were to take ugly pieces of land and turn them into beautiful spaces using food. We've got car parks, towpath, railway station, police station. The doctors is all planted with fruit. So all the places where people go, we started to transform them.
Incredible Edible Todmorden even has the stated ambition of becoming self-sufficient in food by 2018.
Now, you know, people can laugh if they want, but we think, why not have a huge vision and a big dream and work hard to achieve it? And this year, we've now got two limited companies, one at the school, a fish farm and a food hub. We've got Apprenticeship Centre, a limited company, and the dream is it will become a centre for young people to learn the skills that are needed to start micro businesses in food production.
So, we have the consumer activism of Carrot Mob and the network building of Sustination. There are new ways of becoming farmers with community support and the use of community shares. And entire towns are becoming engines for new food businesses and innovation. Small ideas, big ambitions, lots of action. Perhaps somewhere in there, models that could have a mainstream future.
Dan Saladino reporting from the front line of food activism. But how realistic are these ideas? Could they radically transform the way we produce, trade, and even think about food? Matthew Taylor has spent more than a decade inside the political system. He was political strategist at Number 10 during the Blair years. Before that, he was head of the Institute for Public Policy Research think tank and is now chief executive of the RSA.
I think Todmorden is fundamentally about raising consciousness, but also getting people in a community to feel that they can do something. And I think one of the other impressive things about Todmorden is the way in which they've engaged local public services. There's a slight shift in the way the health service thinks, so that it recognises that being involved in a healthy food scheme is part of well-being. I think the way that change works is that people often don't feel any sense of efficacy. Once you can crack through that, and even if people just plant a few herbs or they see change going on in their community, it starts to open up the possibility that they can be an agent in food, that it's not something that just a kind of passive consumer. Once people start to volunteer, once they take one small step, we'll subsequently be more open to bigger political conversations about sustainable food.
Do you think there's something about these ideas that's increasingly in tune with a generation of young people who've been described as a lost generation? That same generation that's created the Occupy movement, you know, where there is a lot, obviously, less confidence in mainstream politics?
I think there are a couple of strands to change in young people's attitudes. One is absolutely a sense that the system doesn't work and that they're not willing, and this has been true of young people's revolts through time, they're not willing to accept that this is how the system has to be. They demand change, and you see that in things like the Occupy movement. But I think there's something else, which is a sense that people don't want to live in a world where they don't feel that they know how anything works, where they are merely passive consumers. And I think there is a sense that people want to feel that they can make things, that they have got the kind of basic skills that perhaps their grandparents might have had. And I think something like Tomlinson taps into that sense that people want, that they're not merely passive, but that they can take an active role. And whether it's growing vegetables or whether it's learning how to repair things, that sense of efficacy is an important part of our self-esteem and well-being.
Matthew Taylor on why the world of community activism is worth watching. And you can find links to the ideas we've featured in this programme on our website.
The Food Programme was presented by Sheila Dillon. The producer was Dan Saladino. We'll get the latest on the weather now. At the BBC Weather Centre is Laura Tobin.
Thank you very much and good afternoon, Howard. Well, today we've seen sunny spells and scattered showers. That theme will continue through the rest of the day. Across southwest England, Wales and northwest England for the rest of Sunday, we continue with a northwesterly wind gusting, say, 30 to 40 miles an hour. The wind easing off as we head through the afternoon. Sunny spells and the lot of the showers will ease as we head through the coming hours, and top temperatures today around about 9 or 10 degrees. For these areas through this evening and overnight tonight, the winds will continue to ease off. We will see further cloud pulling in from the northwest, some scattered showers as well, mostly of rain, occasionally sleet and snow across some hills in the far north, and overnight lows typically between 2 and 5 degrees. For southeast England, the Midlands and eastern England, we continue with our bright, breezy afternoon, staying dry with sunny spells, highs of 9 to 11 degrees, our high of 11 in London. Now, gusts of wind at the moment around about 30, 40 miles an hour across these southeastern areas. Through this evening and overnight, the winds will continue to become